Storytellers are part of the fabric of rural America and are in nearly all walks of life.
My colleagues and I were keepers of the story. We're giving them the opportunity to tell their story to help kind of correct some of those misperceptions about the industry and about the work we do.
Dan McHugh is a digital marketer for Grinnell Mutual, a funder of our TV show. But he's more than a contact. He's an experienced game show guest and someone who takes his love of the ice farther than most.
Are you a fan of snow in the month of March?
I have mixed feelings about snow in the month of March. As a backyard skating rink builder, yes.
Really?
We can talk more about that.
Wow.
So anytime it is cold enough that I can maintain a sheet of ice in March, there's a part of me that's really excited about that.
So how thick does the water have to be on the rink?
That is a great question, because last week with the warm spell, I discovered that my ice was thin enough that I could skate through it. So I actually filled one of my boots with water.
Well, so I spent a week at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines for the girls' state basketball tournament, and they put...
That's right.
They put the floor on top of the ice.
That's
and
right.
All that separates the wooden floor, which is maybe 3 to 4 inches, mm-hmm. is
a layer of foam.
It's not even, yeah. I don't think it's an inch. It's this yeah. hard plastic, uh-huh. and it goes over top the ice.
So the difference between the Wells Fargo Arena ice, well, there's a few differences between the Wells Fargo Arena ice and mine. One of them is they have a chiller. So the without getting into the minutiae of ice, that chiller is running very cold glycol, and that is able to keep the ice at a temperature. Ideally, you know, when the wild are out there skating, it's probably about 9 degrees.
The ice above it?
The ice above it, yeah. And that ice is no more than inch thick. So very yeah. thin sheet, but a very cold sheet of ice.
So is your sheet?
Yeah. So so there are rink builders. I've discovered I'm part of a rink building forum on Facebook.
Okay.
And I mean, my friends think I'm a little odd. And my neighbors think I'm a little odd when I go out and I build a rink each winter. But I found that within the spectrum, I'm pretty on the normal side, because there are people who have bought chillers
really
for their backyard, and they really? And they so they can skate in, as long as it's kind of shady, they can skate 50, 60, 70 degrees. That is not our family, because those cost. I mean, whatever the equipment cost, which I shudder. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then their electric bill is several yeah. hundred dollars a month. So
I don't think you can geothermal that.
I don't think you can either. So in our case, what happens is we live in Grinnell. And so we this year we made a slight modification where we put it in the rink in the yard, because we had inherited a playground set from friends of ours. And so there was more of a slope. In one corner. So I had to fill it a little deeper. So the shallow end was 3 inches. The deep end was about a foot.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so that deep end, which is in the shade of my neighbor's garage, still has ice. The shallow end is a puddle. And the kids were out playing it with their rain boots on the other day. But this year, because it was so deep on the deep end, I have a pretty flat yard, but because I had to shift it, I had to get into the slope a little bit. Now, of course, slope is a good thing, because we yeah. don't want rainwater running into our basement. So yeah. slope away from the house is a good thing. But ended up running it for 22 hours or so, you know, just the spigot off the side of the house. And, I have a nice thick kind of farm grade rubber hose, you know, not the garden grade.
Yeah.
And then I usually get a call from someone in the city offices saying, do you have a leak? Because your water bill is much higher than it's been in other months. And I say, no, we built the rink again. And they go, okay, that's good. Yeah.
So do you... With a rink in your backyard, yes. one would assume you're from Minnesota.
I am not.
But you're not.
I'm not from Minnesota. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. With each passing year, my allegiance to Ohio State and the Buckeyes wanes just a tiny bit more. So
I didn't think that was possible.
Well,
for people.
You know, but I didn't attend Ohio State.
There you go.
Yeah. So so there's that. But Columbus, as I graduated high school, and moved away, they acquired a National Hockey League team, mm-hmm. and just kind of fell in love with the sport and with skating. And so when my wife, who's an Iowa native, and I moved to Iowa about 12 years ago, there was kind of like bucket list, like. You know, when we buy a house, if we have a flat enough backyard, there's one thing. When we buy a house, let's make sure we have a flat backyard. Gosh, that would be a lot of fun to do. So when we became homeowners, that's what we did. And my dad, who did skate because he grew up in Cleveland, and his parents were both farmers up in Michigan. So he grew up as a kid in Cleveland playing hockey on the Rocky River and playing on outdoor rinks and whatnot. So he was totally on board with, I'm going to help you build a rink in your backyard. So did enough research, and I'm actually still using the original plywood boards that he and I went to the hardware store and got cut. And I've made some improvements over the year, but fundamentally it's the same thing that we did. And for your listeners, if you ever decide to do this on your own, just a few quick recommendations. One is invest in good plastic. So the first couple of years we did just clear 6 mil from the lumberyard, which was good enough. But there are some companies that sell like a white plastic, and that does help a bit. And then the boards, just kind of think through how you're going to do it. The method we have is just plywood, and then we kind of secure it in place with rebar, and that works for us. But there are other methods out there. Of course, you want to have enough that, on the deep end, you want to have a little bit more support than the shallow end.
Yeah, because if you're running 22 inches of water, it's not little. Yeah, I could see how little plywood's not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you – what is this, a November thing? Thanksgiving?
This is, so I usually order my plastic – let me think about this. The company I order from is sophisticated enough in their marketing that they know when to send the email that I go, this is – okay, I need to order it by this day because I get a discount. So I order it, and it comes sometime, I want to say around Halloween.
Okay.
And then and then I watch the forecast, and I'm probably one of maybe a dozen people in Iowa that's like watching the forecast for when is it going to get cold? When am I going to get that 5 days below freezing? Because then I know that I can do the flood.
And then how long will this ice last? I mean,
last
week was 5 good days over like 45, 50.
Yeah.
Is that end it? You mentioned the one end
so
is done. Is that when it
ends? It's basically done. Yeah. So Thursday. So we're recording. What is today? March.
Today's a Tuesday.
Are we allowed to say what day it is?
We're recording in early March.
Okay. There we go. So so it was March 1st was my last day that I tried to skate.
Okay.
I may, we're here in early March. We're expecting cold weather this week. So I may be crazy and try one more time. But on that first, we had had enough warm days with some rain and ice here in central Iowa that the ice was the skates were not gliding. They were they were kind of carving. So then I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this is the last skate. And then as I was exiting the ice, I hit a bad spot, and the skate went right through and up to the boot. So I had a little bit of standing water in the boot as I was walking back up to the house.
That's a good sign that maybe it's over.
That was kind of, stick a fork in it. It's done.
You're singing the Frank Sinatra song.
I did.
And now the end is near.
The end is near.
We finally face the final curtain. So, Dan, we could talk hockey the whole time, but you mentioned the town that you live in. It happens to be the name of the company that you work for.
That is correct.
And before I go any further, we first met, I'm going to go 5 years
that would
ago,
sound about
probably.
Right. Yeah.
When we entered into a partnership. Yeah. Grinnell Mutual is a funder of the Market to Market Television
they
program.
They are, full disclosure.
Yep.
Yes.
But that is not a funder of this podcast.
No.
But we talk
Yeah.
Often.
We do.
We've discussed several things and stayed in touch. And I've been trying to get together to have you here because there's a couple of things of, well, let's discuss, one, your job. Two, we'll kind of, you know, talk about rural issues.
Yeah.
But three, I just want to give, this would be a tease, I guess, is what we would say. You were a game show contestant.
I was a game show contestant.
We'll tell you the game show.
Yes.
In just a few. But let's start with the day job.
So the day job. So I am Grinnell Mutual's digital marketing strategist. For your listeners, Grinnell Mutual, we're a property casualty insurance company headquartered in Grinnell, Iowa, here in Iowa. And so I've had the privilege of working with a great group, great company now for nearly 6 years. And just a wonderful experience, wonderful people. What brought me to Grinnell Mutual was they were they had a need for improving their digital marketing, and I had come to a point in my career where that's where I wanted to go with my career. So it's been a great fit, a great journey together. I you know, it's funny, Paul. I'm gonna presume that we're of a similar.
We're close.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
And so so my time as an undergrad was a time before many of the social media, many of the things that I do now.
Yeah.
And so there's a certain fascination. We have a high school intern program right now, and I spoke to them recently, and so shared with them a little bit. It's fascinating because when we think about how we use media. You know, whether that's a podcast like this or Facebook or LinkedIn, Instagram,
a MySpace
Snapchat,
page, whatever.
MySpace, Friendster, any of those media to make connections, to build sustained relationships, to build community even. A lot of that was kind of like more theory than practice. And so to see you know, see the most aspirational things that those kind of media can do. And of course, you know, we've seen some of the darker sides here in recent years too.
Yeah.
And then again, it's really a privilege to be able to get paid to do that and to help my coworkers, to help. We have an independent agent force. We have member mutuals. So I've had the privilege working with my colleagues throughout the company, working with independent agents and mutuals really all over the Midwest to help them, you know, kind of understand the why. What I find really interesting about a lot of this digital marketing stuff is we get and even us in the media, I mean, we get a little distracted with the shiny new object. We do.
Yeah.
Oh, look, here we are. We're on a podcast.
Wow,
that's
isn't
a
that
shiny
fun?
Object.
You know, gosh, you know, nobody's doing it. Maybe we should.
Maybe we should. And so what we forget sometimes is kind of the why. You know, these are all tools to help us tell our stories. And so certainly in insurance sense, and, you know, we can talk more about how, I mean, there's a lot of people who are just doing really incredible work telling their stories in farm, in ag, in rural America. And so, you know, that ability of us to be, one, aware of our story, and then, two, to see the opportunity, because certainly in insurance, some of the people listening to this podcast, they've had, maybe they haven't thought a lot about insurance. Maybe they've had the opportunity to think a lot about insurance, and they don't have a great, great opinion of insurance, and that's okay. That's their experience. Hopefully, what we can do, and hopefully what we do every day, is you know, my colleagues and I, we're keepers of the story, and so for our employees, for our independent agents, our member mutuals, we're giving them the opportunity to tell their story to help kind of correct some of those misperceptions about the industry and about the work we do.
I've noticed in, I don't know, probably the last 3 to 6 months, you've really upped the independent agent, who they are, what they're involved in.
Yes.
I mean, it's the same as it is would be for a banker, insurance agent, you know, even a teacher to an extent. In some of these communities, hear who they – this is who they are.
That's right.
Dan is from a farm. Paul is from a farm. You know, these are the people.
Yeah.
They are just like you. They just happen to have moved to your town trying to help you.
Exactly.
the cynic will say, you're just trying to get a buck out of me. But it's more than that, because you have to care about someone's life because you're trying to, you know, better their life.
That's right. Well, and to the cynic, well, yeah. I mean, that's the culture in which we live. You know, most everything we do, there's a need for risk management, mm-hmm. and that's often done through insurance.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, we are.
But we know that, and that's what yeah. they know. Yeah. So if I'm a farm, yeah. I mean, am I getting – you got to help me out here, because you're on Main Street, but you also are helping –
Right.
Everything, right.
Right? So, yeah. So so a little bit about Grinnell Mutual. And of course, I'm not their
correct.
Underwriters, claims folks are many people that come in who can speak much more eloquently about what we do and how we do it. But, you know, kind of at its most fundamental, if you are in the Midwest, there's a good chance that you could reach out to a local independent agent and find and get a quote for auto, your farm, the farm and the home, probably through a local mutual that is a member of ours, business, any number of businesses, contractors. So that's the kind of work we do. And you mentioned the, you know, kind of how we focus. And thank you for watching those videos and reading those articles and posts. But yeah, we have, I mean, the independent agent force, the member mutual. Again, we want to help them master their story. We want to help tell their stories. And, you know, there are a few that kind of stand out to me. There was one woman, agent in Eastern Iowa, Amelia, and she told that, you know, she's a recent college grad. I think she may have majored in ag. I know she had worked growing up on a farm. And so at first, as we were interviewing, much like you and I are now, but without the podcast mm-hmm. element. And so we're chatting a little bit, and, you know, I asked her, well, how'd she get involved? And she's like, well, you know, at first it was really hard because, you know, farmers being farmers, a little standoffish,
yeah.
and they see, you know, in her case, they see a young woman. What, you know, and stereotypes, unfortunately, being what they are, there was a perception, you know, that farmer brought in a stereotype saying, well, what could she know about farm, let alone farm insurance? So her on these first meetings, you know, she's new to the agency. So the agency principal sits with her and says, just want you to know that Amelia grew, you know, she worked on her grandfather's dairy farm. And so then the farmers go, oh, so she knows how to work. And that that just it changed everything for her. And that's kind of, you know, we need more farmers. We need more people in agriculture to tell those stories, so that because we, Paul, you know, I know, Delaney, everybody that's involved with Market to Market knows that there are some really incredible people doing incredible things in agriculture in our country and really all over the world. Certainly here in the Midwest, certainly here in Iowa, and there are these just like we were talking about insurance, there are these misperceptions. There are these misunderstandings. We had, I shouldn't say we, you had the New Food Economy mm-hmm. Writers recently. You know, and they're kind of digging into this really, you know, these market trade publications, and they're finding stories. They're going out and they're talking to the people who are out in the fields. I know, we're good friends with Andy and Melissa Dunn at Grinnell Heritage Farm. Our kids go to school together. We were at the farm Sunday for a birthday. We've been members of their community, organic community support agriculture. And I know that they've done, you know, a big part of their mission is just teaching people, you know, where your food comes from. And of course, part of that is, in their opinion, why organic
is better.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course. And of course, you know, but all of us, wherever we are in within the agricultural system, we believe that what we do matters. And we just need to tell that story.
And they're telling that story in a fairly progressive community of Grinnell.
They are. That's right.
And not everybody knows that story. So I find it interesting with the new food folks based in New York.
Yeah.
That they're under and the reason we put them on the podcast is because they are trying to tell, oh, you're a food writer. No. Mm-hmm. I'm more about your food and where it comes from. Oh, it just comes from that CSA. No. It comes from and they're telling people that wouldn't normally understand or get or comprehend that type of operation. And there's people inside agriculture who might not fully understand, you know what, I am a hog guy through and through.
Right.
I don't understand dairy. I mean, I get it, but I don't.
Yeah.
And, oh, so that's how their price protection program works. Uh-huh. That's how they're, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it is, and we hope that people, our audience, has a strong passion for knowledge and trying to, you know, that's why I think we've been able to be on the air for as long as we have.
Absolutely.
Because we tell people about that. So for you as a kid who grows up in the city, you still had farm roots.
Farm roots, that's right. So all of my grandparents, my mom's side, they grew up on farms in southern Ohio, Appalachia. My dad's parents grew up on farms in West Michigan. And so some of my parents' generation farmed. Mm-hmm. So I certainly wasn't immune from the farm. I certainly knew where my food came from. I certainly knew the difference between a corn stalk and a field of soybeans. But really, it was through, meeting who ended up, Sarah, who ended up, we're married now. And so as we started to date, coming to Iowa for the first time, living on the farm for the week, falling, you know, and I'm going, oh, this just, you know, it's quiet, it's peaceful. And you know, and she grew up with it. So she's like, when can we go into town? But, you know, just like hearing her tell stories of Agnes. You know, there came the time when Agnes the cow, she had a good run, and then she became dinner, and Agnes was tough. And just kind of, what? Wait, you ate Agnes? Yeah, you know, she, that's what we do.
Now, do you mean Agnes was tough in the sense of to make her dinner, or was her meat not very good?
My understanding about Agnes was that, kind of a tough steak.
Yeah.
Not like literally, not metaphorically.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes when they're older, they just, it's not
exactly
always quite the same. So, but now you know that.
Now I know. And we've had, you know, my wife's uncle, they have a hog confinement. My in-laws have raised, you know, there was, she went through, my mother-in-law went through, you know, there was charcoal and then bacon and then like other cuts of meat and then preparation for pigs. And so, you know, we've had, I met that pig.
Well, I was just going to say, are these the names of animals?
They charcoal? Are the name, charcoal, bacon.
Yeah.
I will get, I'm sure once this is,
you'll airs, remember.
Yeah, or I'll get a text. Oh, yeah, you forgot to mention this, you know, this method of preparation. Now they're just called numbers.
Do you find value in this work? Click over to iptv.org to show your support of our efforts. Now back to Dan McHugh.
20 years ago, would that conversation have seemed odd? Does the Dan of
2018
think it's normal
now? I think everything. I mean, if you had told me, you know, as a kid growing up in Columbus, Ohio, that I'd be living in that I'd be living in Iowa, that I'd be working for an insurance company, that I would be a digital marketer. I mean, all you know, it's like also you grew a third arm and you have a flying car. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're almost there on most of those.
I know. We're getting close. It's still a nub, though, that third arm.
Well, what I was going to say comparable to that is the was the joke on Saturday Night Live last weekend about the person who – I think it was Barbara Streisand.
Yes.
Now has three dogs and – or had three dogs because she cloned the one and to make it two.
Right.
And then I think Colin Jost says, celebrities, they're just like us. You know, so that's pretty
exactly,
funny.
Exactly, yeah.
But cloning is a thing that we talk about on the farm now.
Yep.
And we're not thinking of it as – way out there, it's just a normal. Well, how can we not take the animal that won the state fair prize or mm-hmm. brought the big price at the auction.
That's right.
Why would we not want that?
Or something that's even, well, something that's happening now, which is autonomous vehicles. I mean, we hear about, you know, the tests. I'm not sure if there have been tests in Iowa yet, but certainly elsewhere in the U.S. where vehicles have, I mean, logged millions of miles driverless. But we've got fields right now that are on the verge of being driverless in terms of, you know, what the tractor, you know, those different mm-hmm. steps of production. I mean, if you've driven, and I presume, Paul, that you have.
A tractor?
No, not.
Oh, a driverless tractor. I've been around them. I haven't fully operated one.
Right,
Let's say that.
Well, and in northwestern Iowa, I mean, there are fields where you see the big white pole, and that is what the tractor, that autonomous tractor is using to orient itself mm-hmm. as it's going through the field. So we're, you know, we get a lot of it's easy to find news and opinion about what happens on our roads, but it's maybe a little bit further along in our fields. Mm-hmm.
So you have conversations with agents, things like that. You're telling mm-hmm. their story. What is it that you're finding the rural consumer, the ag consumer has,
yeah,
I won't say enjoyed, but partaken, you know, consumed your content and
yeah.
I mean, how do you try to connect with someone who's under 40 on the farm in Jasper County or in Marion County or wherever, close to your office, Humboldt or, you know, or in Wisconsin, Minnesota? Yep. What are you trying to tell those people?
So I think the first thing is that rural America, the story is much more complicated. And certainly we're not trying to tell the story as, hey, this story is really complicated. We're going to focus on the things that really celebrate it. There's a lot, you know, if I could recommend, you know, kind of further reading, the Strong Towns movement, Chuck Marone out of, Minnesota, a town went out of my head, the one with Paul Bunyan, Brainerd.
Oh,
he grew
okay.
up in Brainerd. Yeah. So Chuck Marone, the Strong Towns movement, is really championing sort of we already have the model of what a thriving community could be, and that's what's in a lot of our rural Midwestern towns, which is mixed use, you know, a core, rather than this sprawling, low density, making sure that the commercial is separate from the retail, which is separate from the residential. You know, two other people that when I kind of look at people who really champion rural and are doing a great job telling the story, one is in Oklahoma, Becky McCray. Love what she's doing, and she has a website called Small Business Survival. Read that. Wonderful. Really a lot of creativity and innovation for what small businesses, what people living and working in small towns, even much smaller than Grinnell, mm-hmm. can do. The third one here in Iowa, and you should have her as a podcast guest,
okay.
Deb Brown, up in Webster City.
Oh, in Webster City. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's somebody in northwest Iowa that I've been thinking about, but go ahead.
Yeah, so Deb and Becky are chums, and what Deb is doing up in Webster City, I mean, she, I would say that when you think of like a someone who does Twitter well, you tend to think of someone who you know, kind of a hipster, ironic, knows how to meme, probably wears denim ironically. Or flannel or whatever. Deb is, you know, she's, you know, kind of a boomer, you know, older white woman, but kills on Twitter, much like Becky kills on Twitter. And Deb, what Deb is doing in terms of economic development up there in Webster City is just great. Though she may not appreciate me calling her out as a boomer and a white woman. But the whole point is there's a lot that's going right. There's an agent here in Iowa Because you know, when I see an agent that's doing well, much like, you know, you see someone that, oh, like, I want to tell that story. I want to learn more behind that story. So there's an agent up in, it's Joan Frazier, Ibling Insurance, Ackley, Iowa.
Okay. AGWSR.
That's right. Or as, well, I always, in my head, I'm always Aguasir.
Aguasir,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. They probably don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
So what Joan is doing, you know, she, in terms of a digital strategy, she wants her Facebook page to be, you know, that feel of Main Street Ackley. But she knows from a business development, she cannot thrive. Her agency cannot survive on being Main Street Ackley. So, but likely the people that choose to do business with her agency, they're looking, you know, they have a connection to Ackley. Or, you know, maybe it's a first degree. They don't live in Ackley anymore, but they grew up there. Or that word of mouth piece. And so and I think that's really powerful to give people that sense, well, that community connection, that sense of connection, even though, you know, I mean, maybe you've been to Ackley.
Yes.
I've been to Ackley once or twice, uh-huh. Just passing through on the way north. So it's making those connections. And being that flavor, telling that story. You know, that's an example of someone who's really thriving, doing well, even though, again, they can't just be Ackley, but they can capture that spirit of Ackley and help find, you know, tell their story, find a wider audience.
So wider stories.
Yes.
Wider audience.
Yes.
Tell your story. Before I let you go, we have to say, how on earth did you ever end up or want to end up on Win Ben Stein's
Money?
Oh,
okay. Wow. This is a big transition. So, where to begin with this? So, you know, as a kid, maybe like you, you know, I mean, you watch game shows and you're like, well, that's...
I could do that.
I can
solve the puzzle then.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so we've skipped over a part of my backstory where I ended up in Southern Nevada for a few years, working in the social sector, worked on my master's degree. And while I was there, I actually did a different game show first.
Oh.
I don't know if we want to talk about that before we get to Ben Stein.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, another game show.
Yeah. So picture, I'm dating myself now, but Millionaire becomes this cultural phenomenon. And really, you know, up to that point, there had never, at least in my lifetime, there hadn't been a game show that really caught on primetime.
Right.
But it's a thing. Right? You remember.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember we'd sit around in the newsroom and watch it.
So, yeah. I mean, and people were doing that all over the country. I mean, you know, it was appointment viewing back when we had appointment viewing.
No ability to record.
Now we have, you know, it's Twitter and Trivia HQ.
Yeah, so, right.
So every network is scrambling like, oh, what's our millionaire going to be? So NBC decides to reboot 21.
And we will start our first game of 21.
If you know your TV history, that was maybe the original or the most successful primetime game show. But then there's a movie quiz show, which kind of outlines the story. There's big scandal because this professor at Harvard who was winning consecutive, you know, biggest winner on the show, well, he's being fed the answers. And
sure.
Once that, so there was a lot, it killed game show as a genre really until Millionaire, and created a lot of controls within the networks.
Are you saying that Card Sharks, Sale of the Century, and everything else I watched when it was raining, I couldn't go out, those don't count? Those weren't prime time.
Well, those were daytime.
Those were daytime.
If you were like me, you were watching those on the days that you were home from school.
That you couldn't go out and work in the afternoon or you were home from school.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Or Press Your Luck. That was...
No whammy stop.
That's right.
So your 21 comes along and...
So, yeah. So, so there was... remember when we read newspapers? So there was this little... I can remember, you know, I'd just gotten back from Christmas, spent, you know, flew home, see my family, come back to Vegas, looking through the paper, and there's this little ad for a 800 number to call to, you know, like, oh, if you want to be a contestant on a game show, I'm like, you know, I'm young, single.
Yeah.
Working at the time. Well, yeah, you know, I've Now, married, children, both of us work full time. Yeah, you know, the time is a little bit more.
A little different.
Yeah, a little different. Mm-hmm. So, call, there's a quiz. I pass the quiz and they're like, hey, go to Caesar's Palace on this day and time. And okay, I can do that. And then, Paul, what does one wear to a game show audition?
I don't think I would wear what I'm wearing right now, the flannel shirt. I'd probably wear what you're wearing, a collared, nicer shirt, yeah.
And the velvet smoking jacket.
Well, yeah, or hot pink coat, either way.
By the way, the hot pink coat, we of course went to watch Grinnell lose the 4A championship.
It's a very good team, very good team.
It was a very good team, still is a good team. But we're talking about communication branding. So just an aside, I love how the girls' athletic union embraces the color pink. All of the state officials, the host of the television show, embracing that pink. So
from head to toe.
Head to toe.
We've got it all.
Yeah, that's right.
That hot pink coat did make it out for Saturday night. It does kind of mess with the video levels from what I've heard.
I had wondered about that. Sometimes
the video guy and I still aren't speaking to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
He said I made his life miserable that night.
There's nothing that the food or beverage of choice can't help to.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. So you wore a smoking jacket?
So I wore some. No, I did not wear a smoking. I think I went. You know, like kind of like you were saying, like collared shirt. Maybe throw on a some sort of a blazer. I can clean up, but I'm not taking this too seriously. So there's paperwork, there's a written quiz, and then you either pass or then that filters out some people, and then you do mock-ups. And of course, you understand this, you're in television, so there are frequent reminders. Remember, television is a visual medium, so be expressive, look happy, and things like. And I'm thinking, as a someone who majored in this, right.
Yeah.
But for other people, I should probably do that. So, and that was a don't call us, we'll call you. I was like, at this point, this was an interesting experience.
Yeah.
And here I have years later, here I am talking about this experience. So I have a story to tell. Well, sure enough, they come calling. And because I was working full time, I wasn't able to go. And then again, it's like, well, this was a cool experience, but they came calling a second time, and I was able to go, and so then but I was not on air, and so at that point, going to the NBC studios in Burbank, on NBC's dime, and getting to sit in it wasn't a green room, but it would be similar to the studios here at Iowa Public Television, kind of a sound stage. But not going on air. Well, okay, that was, I got a free trip to LA, and they flew out my best friend, and who did not live in Las Vegas, who lived in a different part of the country. So I got to, free weekend with my best friend in LA. Well, okay, that was pretty cool. And then they came calling a third time, and I actually appeared on air. And, yes.
Wow, okay.
And won, so I did win a little bit of money. And of course had friends and family all over the country. Oh, that was amazing. So, that was an amazing experience. Well, skip ahead a few years now in grad school, and, there's signs somewhere on campus, like, contestant audition. I don't remember whether or not it said Ben Stein. May have.
Is this still out west?
This is back in, this is at UNLV.
So, okay. So you're still in Nevada.
So, Ben Stein, more modest operation. So instead of at Caesar's, it's at the Stratosphere, like in a little conference room. But same thing, as it turned out, one of the contestant coordinators was someone from 21. So I was like, oh, hey, good to see you again.
It's time to find out how smart Ben really is as we play more of Win Ben Stein's Money.
It was the last season of Ben Stein's Money, if your listeners remember the show.
Comedy Central would be my, if I remember correctly. Yep. Yeah.
And so, so Jimmy Kimmel, who just hosted the Oscars, I've now shaken hands with a host of the
Two-time Oscar host.
Was he two-time?
Yeah, he did it last year too. Because remember, they brought the tour bus of the people through.
Yes.
He was the one. He made all the jokes about.
Right.
They'll never have me back because I messed up the end of the Oscars, even though he had nothing to do with it.
No, it's all PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Yes,
fault.
Right.
Yes. So, so then Jimmy, someone else hosts for a season or two. And then, one of Jim, like Cousin Sal, I think it was, ends up being the host. So the last episodes they shoot for that season, it kind of, this is the magic of television. So they shoot the episodes, where they're auditioning and I'm making air quotes here, Jimmy's relatives. So it's Jimmy, a relative of Jimmy's, and Ben Stein. So it was myself, Ben, Jimmy, and his Aunt Chippy. And so end up, the format, the whole secret sauce to that show is very silly category names, which you had to read in full. And so, and then there are three rounds. So in the three contestant round, get through that. The second round where it's two contestants and Ben, get through that. And then the last round is mano a mano. And you're in a soundproof booth listening to The Ride of the Valkyries. And it's a lightning round, so you have a minute to answer 10 questions
sure.
or something like that. So, got through the first two rounds, lost to Ben, but still got a few hundred dollars of his money, which was pretty cool.
Yeah,
especially when you're a grad student,
right?
And you're managing your checkbook down to the last $25.
Correct.
So, and of course, Jimmy is very quick-witted. Very funny man. Ben, also very quick-witted, and just had a fantastic experience doing that.
So did they record that in California as well?
They did. They did. That was somewhere in Hollywood. And I don't know why you would have my wife on the show, but if you had her on the show, she would tell you what it's like to sit in the audience for one of those shows, which I think she had a little bit of a different experience. She would be a good interview, by the way, music educator.
So. All right. Always, you know, something we could, you know, entertain. Maybe
That's
we'll
right.
expand
That's
to
right.
a second podcast. So you're discussing basic cable versus network television.
Yes.
You know, so I mean,
yes.
you're talking about the price
That's
differences,
right.
and
That's
I
right.
would imagine, yeah. Did they pay for you to come from Vegas to Los Angeles?
They did not. My my roommate from undergrad, he and his wife were living in Southern California at the time, going to seminary. So we were able to just kind of sleep on their pullout.
Yeah.
So the it was not all expenses
right.
paid
like it had been
right
with 21.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing here. Step up to a network, we pay things differently than what I did when I was in
yeah.
local television.
Yeah.
And I know that we are on the lower end of what other people, you know,
right.
you see network news come through and you're, you know, Rick Fuller, who's a photographer for us here, he'd worked for ABC Network News shooting
yeah.
video. He always tells the stories about, you know, what they used to do with cash. And
yeah.
it was just like, oh, you're going here. Here's an envelope. And
yep.
that was pre-credit cards and you just spent what it is. And
yeah.
he was at the whim of whatever news was happening.
That's right.
They might go to Kentucky from Virginia that day. And
yeah.
I don't have any clothes. So I'll just go buy some at Kmart and just leave mm-hmm. it in the room. And that's what they did.
And that's what they did.
So and I now that money goes to shareholders.
Yes, it does.
And not that
yes,
expense. You still bring us eyeballs, but you don't get all that back. We're going to
yeah.
reward those that have invested in the company.
That's right.
And we will reward you for coming over here with such a great conversation and stories. I thank you so
yeah.
much for
this
coming. I hope
fun.
It was worth it.
It was so worth it. Paul, I appreciate so much you having me on and in our meandering conversation. I appreciate you, the listener, for sticking with us to the end of this podcast.
No more surprises? We don't have any other game shows we need to discuss?
I don't think so. Paul,
there's always a story.
I have a feeling, yeah, you're right. There's always a story. So, you know, maybe a year from now, have me back and we'll
come up with some
spin
new stuff.
Some more. Yeah, we'll spin some more yarns.
All right, Dan. Thank you so much for coming. And,
thanks, Paul.
And appreciate you coming.
My pleasure.
My thanks to Dan McHugh for visiting and you for listening. Please consider giving us a 5-star review to help others find us. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.